You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 17 March. Chinese house price index data came out an hour ago, year on year, down 4.8%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Kenyana, Scope Prime, Renogen finally finds helium. Well, what's that, 2-3 years late? And I want to chat to him about diversified miners. Does he have a preferred, and is it because of the commodity or perhaps because of the company? Adam Reeves from ABSA, structured products, how they work, how do they do that upside, how do they do the capital guarantee? TransUnion Africa and the growth in buy now, pay later will be our third guest. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb: Checkers will open flagship store in vacated Pick n Pay Hyde Park space. Pick n Pay closed its store at the centre after it struggled to reach profitability. Business Day: Vodacom and Remgro's appeal against Block merger to be heard in July. Competition Tribunal rejected the merger of the two fibre businesses back in October. Morning markets: US was green on Friday, S&P up 2.1%, NASDAQ 2.5% higher. Easter's mostly green. Sydney's down 0.25%, Tokyo up 1.1%, Hong Kong up 1.25%, and Tencent up 1.4%. Commodities are mixed. Gold futures is lower, $2,995. Brent is $70.97. Platinum, $1,015. Palladium lower, $973. The Rand is 18.20, Bitcoin 83,400, and top 40 opening call, 250 points to the green, 0.3% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Kenyana. He is from Scope Prime Care. Appreciate the early morning time. Renogen announcing Friday that they are finally able to produce helium. Still with challenge. They're using small containers to fill a big one rather than direct into the large container. A giant step for them. I mean, this is their phase one. They are very late, but it's still an important step.
You know, the story size is one which is quite amazing, because in 2016, they signed an agreement with Afrox Gas that they would send the first batch of commercial helium to Afrox Gas in 2018. And we're sitting here almost 7 years later, and the first batch just went out. And I think it speaks to the technical challenges that they've had to face. I think without Stefano Morani, I think this business would have been closed a long time ago. I think it's just by his pure will to get it over the line that they find themselves where they are right now.
I take your point on that, and I appreciate it is very difficult to get your LNG and your helium, and as you say, particularly the helium, the technical component of it. But I suspect as well that the market is, I mean, the stock has been under significant pressure, and the market, I don't know about it's moved on, but I suppose he's lost confidence and he has to now regain that from the market, which is not going to be easy.
I think from both his customers and as well as his investors, I don't think it's just the market itself. And I think at the time when we first visited the Virginia Phase 1, I think there was such a hype around the stock, and it was particularly from retail investors who really were looking for an asset such as this, because there's nothing like this on our market. And I think institutionally, it's been too small for institutional backing, but the retail investors is where he lost most of the confidence, and I think he has a long way to make to get that confidence back with retail investors.
Yeah, 100%. There are folks out there who paid 40 rand a share for it, and the massive bounce on Friday has not allayed their concerns around their losses. Switching gear, diversified miners. I was having a couple of chats around various different diversified miners last week. I thought I'd bring you into it. I know we've chatted around miners before. What is your preferred diversified miner in the local or perhaps even the global market?
I think at the top of everything lies BHP, and it's just purely from the fact that they are so big and so well diversified, and they've kind of streamlined all the minerals that they have into copper, iron ore, and nickel. But because they're always operating so well, they always find themselves really better priced than the rest of them. So I think my preferred entry right now is Rio Tinto, because they have similar types of assets within their stable, but just a lot cheaper, trading at about 10.62 PE. They have bull rates. They also have copper. They have nickel. They have iron ore. And this morning, it's up about 2% on a report by Goldman Sachs that says that there will be a re-rating in the price of iron ore. And I think that is where the value will see. There will be a value unlock for Rio Tinto.
And it certainly is. I mean, the story has we're not mentioning coal, PGMs, gold. It really is around copper. It's around iron ore. It's around nickel. So in many cases, those sort of future new energy commodities.
And you're entirely correct that the renewable space has seen such a foundational plan from most governments, that these sort of minerals are going to be very important for the new energy mix. And BHP has gotten themselves into that space, and Rio Tinto has also gotten themselves into that space. Companies such as Anglo are just now starting to realign after the takeover bid from BHP Billiton. And for me, it's because of the fact that they never got the correct mineral mix within the stable, that they've had to restructure the way they had.
Yeah, it is that. It's that correct mineral mix, PGMs, diamonds, etc. No one wants that from Anglo. Truthfully, neither does Anglo anymore. We'll leave it there. That's Kenyon Yana. Scope Prime, always appreciate the early morning insights. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Adam Reeves. He's a senior specialist investment analyst at Absa. Adam, appreciate the time today. Structured products, we hear about them lots. I have guests on this show talking around them from time to time. I suppose at a top level, help us understand what they are and how they help investors, in particular, managing risk.
Simon, thanks for having us on. Yeah, structured products have been around for quite a while, and they definitely do have a place in investors' portfolios, alongside collective investment schemes, portfolio share portfolios, etc. Effectively, what a structured product is, it's a note that's issued by an issuer, a bank in this case, or Absa CIB, and that basically gives you performance of an underlying asset, and that asset could be an index, it could be commodity, it could be multi-asset, you can have some fixed income in there, can be in rands, can be in dollars. There's normally a term, so it could be 3 years or 5 years. And typically what it does, it gives you exposure to that defined underlying basket of assets, but changes the risk characteristics by potentially offering capital guarantees or conditional capital guarantees, and also some upside potential to that basket that could either be leveraged or geared, where you, the market goes up 10, you can get more than 10, and sometimes up to a cap. So there's quite a few different variations and permutations. But it's effectively a good way to get a long-term investment, but also choose what type of capital guarantees that you want.
And that's the key point. I mean, you know, markets are risky. We don't know what's going to happen today, next week, next year. The fact that we can get, and to your point, T's and C's on what sort of downside protection, different products will have different conditions, but also potentially that leverage. And in other words, it gives you, it tries to give you the best of both worlds. I mean, in a perfect world, it gives me downside protection and it gives me faster upside. I mean, that really is the best of both worlds.
Absolutely. The cost of that is term. So as I said, typically it could be 5 years. So you are locked in for 5 years in order for you to get that full capital guarantee, depending on what the market does. You can obviously surrender your structured product early, but you're not going to be guaranteed what the market's done, because all the unwind bits have their own mark-to-market nuances as well.
Is that the, I'm trying to ponder, so where's the downside? The downside, I suspect, is that term nature, that it's going to be a 3 or 5 year product. And you can get out, but that's not what it's designed for. This needs to be money that in an ideal world, you can say buy to for a number of years.
Absolutely. I mean, there is one other thing as well, is that you don't necessarily own the underlying asset themselves. You just own the structured product, which is the note, which is from a bank issuer. And the other sort of downside to this is once you're pretty much locked into that payoff, that's it. So what might suit you now, you know, your view on the market for the next year, it's quite hard sometimes to make a five-year call on that. So typically, structured products sort of form more of your basic building blocks of your portfolio, your core plus satellite, if you like. You can do a lot of your core in this. So as you said, put it in, forget about it. You've got a nice capital guarantee. It could be in dollars. You've got general market exposure, and then you can sort of trade the funky stuff around that.
I get your point. And counterparty risk, I mean, not insignificant, but my view is always if our big banks start going down, we are queuing to get into Zimbabwe.
We've got other problems.
Our problems are our Brightbridge and stuff like that. But yeah. I like your point. It's not a case of a listener out there saying, this is brilliant, I'm going to put everything I own, including the cat and the dog. This really is, you're still putting together a portfolio. This fits into a part of a portfolio.
Absolutely. And I think it's also important to say, I mean, South Africa is a very well-regulated and vibrant financial advisor market. And typically, we don't get the man on the street knocking on our door looking for a structured product. Mm-hmm. It's more sitting with an advisor who uses structured products as part of their investor's portfolio. And as you said, not a whole pot, but there's a good percentage of your assets which should be in a structured product because it gives you that certainty of capital over the long term.
Someone's out there and thinking, but how do they do this? What's the magic inside? I'm imagining, I mean, if you've got a downside protection, well, then you buy some bonds to give that guaranteed. And then it's just some derivatives, call and put options, in a sense, to give the leverage and the protection. And I know that's a vast oversimplification, but is that broadly how it works?
That's exactly how it works. So if you were a very astute investor, you could come and get all the components yourself. However, one of the beautiful things about structured products is we've done that in the background. So we buy all the component bits, we wrap it up either in a note or some of the structured products are available via a life policy. Mm-hmm. And that simplifies everything. So your terms and conditions, you know exactly what you're going to get. But the actual bits that go into leading up to that path-dependent payoff, that's what we do for a living.
Yeah, and you guys can do the Black Scholes pricing rather than me. Last question. You implied up front that, I mean, I joked earlier, cats and dogs, but I mean not. But if it's listed, it can pretty much go in. I mean, you and your colleagues at ABSA have got a smorgasbord of potential structured products.
We do. We do have some off-the-shelf stuff, which is sort of like, you know, your regular type of stuff, because a structured product, by its very nature, has a start date and an end date. Mm. And typically, there's a subscription window where advisors will go and gather their clients' money. Then that would get allocated to a single tranche of that structured product. That tranche closes, and then any further monies goes into the next month's tranche.
Yeah.
So those are your sort of off-the-shelf type of stuff. And on that, there's an absolute mad array of underlying indices, underlying multi-facet indices, multi-currency indices, et cetera, et cetera. But sitting with your advisor should be able to actually work out what is suitable for your needs.
We'll leave it there. That's Adam Reeves. He's Senior Specialist Investment Analyst at ABSA. Appreciate the time. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio sub-managed by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Lorden Chorlidge, he's Sales Vice President FinTech at TransUnion Africa. Lorden, appreciate the time today. The TransUnion Consumer Pulse study was for Q2 2024, found a significant number of South Africans had heard of Buy Now, Pay Later. What really struck me is that almost 50% have actually used it in the last 12 months. This really has taken off hugely in the local economy.
Morning, Simon. Morning to your listeners. Absolutely. I think it's something that we maybe just bring to the fore. It's been around for a while. Mm. I think the advancements in technology, the rise in the e-commerce platforms, and the ability that it actually offers people a new way of accessing credit that potentially would have excluded them when we look at the traditional ways banks and retailers, you know, look and that score people when they're looking for credit. So I think the younger population is what the data is showing, the millennials, Gen Zs coming through specifically. They are, digital first, digital ready, quite mature in the use of apps and super apps and the likes. And our data suggests that the majority of consumers who have heard of and have used is this lower income, or rather the younger population coming through, and at times the lower income, because it's their first foray into a potential credit line.
And it is that ease. I mean, sure, maybe you've got a credit card, which is essentially what you could use. Of course, credit card comes with high fees, but it is that ease of it, and therefore avoiding the interest on the credit card and spreading payments over a couple of payments. This isn't 12 months. This is like, you know, 2, 3, maybe 4 payments. It is the classic ease of use, which is what fintech is all about.
Absolutely. Agility, being nimble to move with the trends. I think the consumer has said so, and I think the younger generation, we call it, the instant gratification, mm-hmm. I guess, is what sometimes the younger generation is known for. So the market and the providers are jumping on that, but they're doing it in an ethical, I think, in a transparent manner to explain to the consumer, because at the end of the day, education is vital to uplift the South African consumer. A large cohort of our base and our consumers are unaware of either how interest works or how credit works. Mm. So they get caught in these debt traps and then are unable to get out, and then therefore they are locked out, in inverted commas, when a traditional bank or retailer wants to look at them and they've got potentially a default or a judgment against the name. No one really wants to lend to someone who's got some sort of risky behavior to their name. So, we've seen the buy now, pay later trend really over the last, I'd say, 5 years explode. But at the same time, it's looking at to almost democratize credit access, while at the same time responsibly build a credit profile or history for these younger mm-hmm. individuals who are coming first time into the market for the later stage, the more big assets, the homes, the cars, yeah. maybe a larger personal loan to then uplift and take them to the next stage from a life stage perspective.
Absolutely. And that's really where it fits. I mean, you talk around the younger generation. Absolutely. They are sort of fintech first in many space. You mentioned the lower income as well. This really does fill that gap. Folks who haven't got the fancy credit profiles, who might not even have sort of formal banking relationships. It is about bridging a gap that has existed and with respect to traditional financial services, been ignored forever and a day.
No, I agree. I think, we can't look at the banks and the incumbents too harshly. I think they've got, capital reserves,
sure,
and they've got very strict lending requirements, and we have to do the right thing in terms of for the customer themselves. Mm-hmm. We can't over-indebt them and overextend them. But I agree fully. I think we're seeing this as a really great new wave of financial inclusion and driving the financial inclusion narrative in South Africa and Africa. Maybe just one story yep. that we've seen from one of our main providers, Happy Pay, is one of our BNPL providers on our side, and they're seeing the average consumer being a female and a large SME cohort, so a small business utilizing BNPL for working material, a laptop, a POS device. Mm. So it's giving access to a consumer who maybe doesn't have 5,000 rand now, but over a 3 or 4 month installment, it's palatable to pay 1,000 rand for them to start their small business. Now you can imagine the 2.5 odd million SMEs that we have in South Africa, 60% of our workforce, 40% of our GDP. Imagine if we could allow more lenders to see them yeah. as a more responsible entity, what that could mean from an unemployment perspective. One body for every, 2.5 million. That's 2.5 million new entries potentially from a labor force perspective. That's sizable impact to the GDP.
I hadn't even thought of the SME angle. Absolutely. A last question. Concerns around lack of credit reporting, around over-indebtedness. My understanding is that, the buy now, pay later is new. It is looking into getting into credit reporting systems and regulatory structures. This is an industry which is evolving and looking to formalize in a sense, or maybe formalize is the wrong word, but certainly to get into the more formal structures in some sense as well.
Absolutely. I think we're working with and have seen a big drive from the buy now, pay later providers to be incorporated into the credit framework and structures. So submitting data to the association so that the credit bureaus like ourselves can see more of the consumer, meaning we could then give better models and prediction and data back to the lenders who are then looking at these, a consumer in the future. But from our engagement in the market, I mean, these buy now, pay later providers are all driving affordability-based lending. They're looking at transparency. They are looking at clear repayment structures, avoidance of hidden fees. So they are setting up shops that are vastly different to potentially what, historically, they might have been painted with a brush that, of loan sharks or payday loan, fly-by-night. This is a mature market. This is a mature ever-evolving providing of services. And I think it will only get better as they mature their regulatory frameworks and responsibilities.
Yeah, and I mean, if we compare it against the hire purchase agreements of the 70s and 80s, it is chalk and cheese. We have massively evolved, and that's what we're looking for. We'll leave it there. Milord Ntorlij, Sales Vice President, FinTech at TransUnion Africa. Appreciate the early morning time. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Have you used Buy Now, Pay Later? I haven't, but I've chatted with some friends who have absolutely loved it. Big ticket items, a washing machine. You know, rather than shell out 1 month, pay it over 3 months. Just take some of the pain off. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. That's it for today. Friday, I was chatting with Rob Van Aden. He is CEO of Scope Markets. Financial education benefits to the economy and the country. He was very much saying, yes, it's good for the individual, but it's good for the broader economy and ultimately South Africa. I asked you, how did you get smart around money? About a third said work and education. A quarter said school of life. Rest was split between parents and some of you saying, still not money smart. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nubuchle, Nicole, to you for listening. My guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Private markets in the age of Trumponomics.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.